Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You think about the person in your life when you started believing you more than anyone else. They're the ones that made the sacrifices. When I walk out, my old man's next to me. They're not just looking at you, they're looking at what made you. Now, what I'm talking about our fucking game. I want them talking about us. All right, enjoy your lunch,
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hola, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and a man who's watched the Newcastle game twice, so you don't have to. It's Nathan E. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Oh, I nearly didn't. I nearly didn't this time. I had it loaded up yesterday evening, and then someone else put up a thread, which I've quote tweeted, and I went, yeah, I think that's right. Maybe I can get away with not watching it. And then I rewatched it in triple speed and went, yeah, I agree with that thread. That'll do.
Well, little look behind the scenes. We're recording a lot later than we normally do on a Monday night. And that has given me the chance to rewatch it as well. I've had a punishing afternoon of having a £300 bill for work on my car and then rewatching Newcastle 4 Tottenham 0. So, yeah, sucks to be me right now. But before we get into that nonsense, Spencer Shaw says, both because it will break up the misery of the Newcastle results, and I think it's important to recognise excellence within the club, I hope you'll spend some time on the Monday pod talking about the Women's FA Cup semi-final. Not sure when the final is or how I'm supposed to watch it, but I know I'll want to tune in. I've been truly delighted at the excitement for the women's game here in the US this year, particularly here in Kansas City, where we have the first built-for-purpose women's stadium in the world, and would love to hear their success this season discussed more. So yes, many congratulations to the Spurs women, who beat Leicester City 2-1 in extra time in the FA Women's Cup semi. Goals coming from Jessica Naz and Martha Thomas. And Nathan, your wife spent some time with the Spurs women's team and wrote a article previewing the match. And I think you're going to try and get her to write something for us exclusively previewing the final. Is that right?
Yeah, well, it might end up being a public blog piece, but I will bother her to try and write a preview. But yeah, that was a good watch on Sunday. Yeah, not least to give a bit of a break between two watches of the Newcastle game back. We were actually hoping to get to that game, but there ended up being complications. But hopefully we're going to get tickets for the final, and I would encourage any other listeners to get along to the final and see if you can bump into me. Eh?
Nice. And do check out the N17 Women podcast. Yeah. They really know their stuff when it comes to Spurs women, and they're also delightful people. And we'll always shout them out when it comes to coverage of the Spurs women's team. They do really good work. Mr. I Am A Boss, who gets called Llama on the Discord, says the post-match reaction from Windy was incredible. Legit was so therapeutic. And Moby says, if we keep playing with this extremely risky style of play, how many emotional support dogs will the fan base need? And that is because I was a bit fed up at the end of my reaction board, which I do for the Patreons every week, regardless of the score. And I said that I was going to go downstairs and spend time with my emotional support dog. And he did cheer me right up, actually. It was amazing how quickly I forgot about the game when I just took the dog out for a walk. Very, very helpful.
So I do normally listen to your reaction podcast, Windy. I haven't done this week. Could you give us a brief summary, a tease of what subscribers can find in if they were to join up?
Yeah, so I was trying to, look at it in a bigger picture way. Normally after the games in the reaction pod, I go into some sort of micro detail about player performances and that kind of thing. Things that are just like stuck in my head that I've seen during the match. But I spoke about the high risk, high reward Ange Ball style and what I think that means. And I'll certainly touch on some of that when we come to talk about the match in a minute. But Yeah, I did find this game particularly interesting from that perspective, and also obviously painful from that perspective, because it was high risk and we got punished, and the reward was lacking, but it didn't need to be necessarily, because, you know, Werner had a gilt-edged chance after, what, 6 minutes or so, and then another one not too long afterwards. So, yeah, I think it was a good exemplar of what can go wrong with Ange Ball. And there's a lot more to say about this game, obviously, as well. But yeah, I do a reaction to every match for the X Sub. So if that's something you're interested in, then do take a look at our Patreon, patreon.com/extrainch. Finkelbeats says, can we please organise a grassroots movement of Tottenham fans to band together and take action against this absolutely despicable third kit? It must never see the light of day ever again. And Nathan spotted that the Reddit user Beckett377 came up with, it's the taupe that kills you, which I think is going to have to be the name of the pod this week, because it's just too good not to be.
We'll have to save Mickey Mouse for if he ever has another bad game.
yeah, Mickey Mouse is another good shout, for obvious reasons. This cursed kit must never be worn again. Thoughts?
I don't think it's cursed. I don't believe in curses. I don't believe in certain kits bringing bad luck. But I think that if you wear beige with a black stripe down the outside and you're playing against an opposition who wear a black and grey that becomes peripheral, a black and white that becomes a peripheral grey in the background, and then you're obviously playing and your eyes are at grass level, so the stands are also a sort of a beige grey. That might have some kind of effect on you. I think I've been meaning to talk about this on the podcast a couple of times and it's just slipped away, but like, this is not a good play for colouring. And like, I'm sorry, like if there's an outside chance that like a Spurs fan designs these kits and a Spurs fan is listening to the podcast, I'm sorry. As a piece of fashion, as a piece of streetwear, absolutely, it's fine. But there is a genuine, in my opinion, failure of sports application here. None of the players have mentioned it. None of the coaching staff have mentioned it. The club have repeatedly played in it. But like, I don't know, man. Like when you see pictures taken pitch side of the players with like the crowd in the background, you can barely make out the players. I'm not saying it's definite, but I would certainly not be surprised to learn that this kit is having an effect on our ability to pick each other out, especially under pressure from a team in also grey.
I think it's maybe there's that, but I think the problem on Saturday was our players seeing their players as well, which was an even bigger problem, and they were in black and white stripes. So I'm refusing to blame the kit here.
Go on, Bardi, get stuck into him.
Well, I'm 6 hours behind you guys, and I got up at 6:30. I was like the rest of a large chunk of our Discord, who got up at 6:30 in the morning to watch this wonderful performance, and it's amazing. I think if I'm ever going to emigrate, I'm going to move the other side of the world, so at least I'll have most of my weekend before Tottenham come in and scupper it instead of it ruins your breakfast, man. Instead of ruining my lunch and ruining my evening. I'm not a happy bunny.
No.
When we start going into it, we could talk about it. But yeah, I'm not very happy with Ange. I'm not very happy with the players. But mostly, I'm not happy with Ange, which is a very different stance for me, instead of blaming the players.
I saw you said something on Twitter about Eddie Howe pocketing Ange. Is that how you feel? You feel like he's just completely come unstuck on this occasion?
Well, I don't think it's just this occasion. I think in the last month or so, he's been pocketed by Gary O'Neill, Silva at Fulham as well. There's been a lot of games where David Moyes has done us twice. There's just been a lot of games where Spurs haven't been great. And it's almost like when things are perfect for us, we're brilliant. But teams are now creating situations. Teams that are good enough create situations which aren't suitable to us and we fall down. And I think, especially attacking-wise, defensive-wise, we've been all right because Van de Ven has been impeccable, Romero's been impeccable, and the rest of them. They've had a really good season, all of them. But on Saturday, Van de Ven had a bad night's sleep. I don't know what was up. It wasn't a good performance from him, and we get smashed 4-0. It was like we were so reliant on him. He's become like our Kane, but in defence, of just sorting us out, digging us out of trouble. It's just too much responsibility on one person. And I think that's perhaps Ange's tactics of just, there's too much importance on Van de Ven to save us, or Vicario to pull out some amazing saves. But I think a lot of what Ange believes in, and a lot of what I thought we were doing, got undone over the weekend. And I think we need to look at Vicario's distribution was awful. Bissouma, once again, was just not there. And Van de Ven had a bad day. And that's just the highlights, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting that you speak about the particular managers that have kind of outthought Ange, because I would say that all of them are predominantly known for their tactics and their ability to neutralize opposition. You know, Gary O'Neill famously did a brilliant segment on Monday Night Football about how he prepared for, I forget who it was at the time, and everyone was like, oh wow, this guy knows his shit. Like, these are sort of the game's deep thinkers, and I include David Moyes in that. Like, he actually, tactically, David Moyes, although he plays shit football, he knows what he's doing from a defensive viewpoint. And I do think there is a pattern forming there when it comes to Postecoglou coming up against sort of deep tactical thinkers and teams coming with a plan and then us not being able to adapt to those plans. And I'm going to attempt to talk through what Newcastle did, and I'd like Nathan to then critique my attempt. So I've literally just rewatched the game back before we recorded, and Newcastle played in a really interesting way that I think we've seen some teams sort of semi play against us before. Whereby when the ball goes back to Vicario or one of the centre backs, they are really hyper aggressive in their press forward into our half. And that is through their front three with Isaac, pressing onto towards the ball, but pressing in leaving Bissouma in his cover shadow constantly. So there's never an option to pass to Bissouma. You cannot find Bissouma because Isaac is literally in the way. And then what was really smart is they played a 3-4-3 or 5-4-1, however you want to say it. The wing backs, when they were pressing in this aggressive front foot way, Elliot Anderson, who doesn't normally play left wing back, he's a central midfielder, but he's a very, very good player, pressed onto Porro, stopping him receiving the ball back to goal in build up. And Jacob Murphy, who's normally a right winger playing right wing back, pushed onto Udogie. And then as soon as we broke that press, so to speak, we you know, Spurs famously are fantastic in build-up. We inevitably are going to break the press now and again. They completely changed up and they fell back into shape. They fell back into a 5-4-1. And what that meant was they could be very then aggressive on our wingers, because in our second phase, the wingers get super wide and the fullbacks come inside and try and find the spaces in between. And both the... When we had to go long, when we were pressed to the extent we had to go long, the outside centre-backs, who were Kraft and Byrne, were really aggressive in the air against Johnson and Werner. And then when the wing-backs fell back into shape, they were equally aggressive against our wingers. And the amount of times Werner got the ball and was forced backwards by Jacob fucking Murphy, he's a winger. it just showed to me that, you know, sometimes personnel doesn't matter. Sometimes it's about the shape, the system, the positioning, the approach. And I think Emil Kraft is a bad defender. I think Jacob Murphy is not a right back. Elliot Anderson is playing left wing back, a role he's probably never played before. And yet they looked so efficient. They looked so well drilled. They looked so well prepared. And we kind of had no answer to it. And inside the first couple of minutes, Fabian Schär had followed Son back into our half and made a tackle. That's kind of that was like the signal to me that, oh shit, they mean business today. They're going to be aggressive and tigerish. And I thought Anderson sort of summed up the aggression throughout with his front-footedness, very physical, you know, obviously trying to ruffle Johnson's feathers. And when you look at the data, their aerial duels were way better than ours all game. And it's kind of no surprise. We're a short team. We're a small team. We can't go long. That's where, like, when we're forced into a plan B, we're forced to play the ball long, Dan Burns is going to mop it up all day. What do you think, Nathan? Is that about right?
Yeah, I think that's about right. I think, so in short, in summary, Newcastle, like several teams have this season, solved the problem of our dynamic build-up, by which I mean constantly changing where our fullbacks are, constantly changing where our number eights are, by tight man marking all the way up. Which again, yeah, we've seen a fair bit of already this season. We've done also a decent job of taking advantage of teams who've done that against us this season, which I'll come back to in a minute. But combining that with the deep and narrow back five low block, I've kind of tweeted about this already, but I want to do it in longer form because, like, whenever Spurs have played well this season, I've been the one saying, "Look how brilliant we are." And whenever we played badly this season, I've gone, "Well, of course we struggled in this game because there were mitigating circumstances. Of course we, what did I use as my examples on Twitter? Of course we struggled against Fulham because Dragusin was playing on the left and he's uncomfortable there. Of course we couldn't quite get it over the line against West Ham because we were lacking a target man, and that was all we needed to see that game out. And a few, you know, other games we've missed key players as well. Similar examples. And my steadfast on that, my message has been, I feel incredible about Postecoglou and his football. I'm really excited about where things are going. I really believe in this football, and I'm unconcerned about missed results here and there. Whereas with this one, I do think that there are genuine causes for concern on this occasion. I do think there are, because it brings me back to the Everton game where I said, hey, Dyche defends in this very particular way that's kind of unique to him, which is that he presses very high, but they don't commit. They remain passive, and then they all sprint to get back into shape and defend in their low block. And very few teams in the world, I think, can repeat that. And teams are beginning to repeat that now. Luton tried and failed. Villa tried and failed. Newcastle, with their outstanding physical intensity, they succeeded on this occasion, which is for me a kind of a turning point of some teams are beginning to get a handle on how to, you know, replicate that style of pressing us in the first phase, not committing, and then recovering into their low block. It's hard to do. It's hard work. It's really hard work for the wingers who have to, you know, start by pressing our centre backs and then run back to cover midfield. And it's hard for the wing backs who have to chase Udogie all the way up into the edge of his own box and then rush back to go cover for our wide players. So again, it's definitely not the case that it's something that just anyone can recreate, anyone can do. You know, few teams in the league, few teams in the world are going to be able to reliably do it. But, you know, Newcastle are a team we now add to that list. And still, I'm not going to go as far as saying, you know, Ange Ball has been found out, because in a bit we'll discuss some possible solutions or some routes to possible success. But the blueprint is very much out there. I think that's fair to say, at least until the end of this season. And it has caused some personal frustration for me with how we approached, you know, the second half, for example.
Yeah, I spent like majority of the last 2 years defending managers and blaming players. And although I'm blaming Ange, I think we've become too predictable, too easy, and we're way too open or way too reliant on certain individuals being brilliant. I do think there are certain individuals within our team who perhaps overperformed when they first arrived or overperformed at the start of the season. I think primarily is Bissouma. Bissouma's like, he's just disappeared. Like, you cover him, he's shadow pressed, whatever that is. So he's now not even pressed. He's just in a shadow and he's out of the game. I think he needs to adapt to that. He needs to change how he's playing. He's not the only number six in the whole of the world that's ever been kind of a plan's been put against him. He has to take it upon himself to be involved, to help out the defenders as well. So I think there's something on him. I think Maddison, the last couple of weeks, has been an embarrassment and a petulant little shit who I wish had got sent off against Luton for that punch. Because he also was a petulant little shit against Newcastle as well with that kick. He knew what he was doing. He left his boot in there. And I think his performances have also been, he's almost like he's believed his hype. He arrived here and had a good start and he thought he was like Glenn Hoddle all of a sudden. And perhaps that's us. Perhaps we were so desperate for him to be great, to kind of take that number 10 shirt on, that we elevated this guy to a place where he doesn't deserve to be spoken about in that kind of level. So I think he needs to have a look at himself as well. And last week, this whole no to Timo thing is some bullshit as well, man. Timo Werner, we know the faults that Timo Werner has. He's not deadly in the box, but I want to protect him a little bit because people blaming him for not taking those chances would have been a different game. I don't think so. I'm not the biggest Werner fan, but I think he's doing all right. But I do think Bissouma and Maddison need to have a word with themselves because they're not the players that they think they are or the players that we kind of hoped they were.
I'm kind of open to all of those thoughts, to be honest. So I've laid out how, or we've laid out how Newcastle approached the game. I want to talk about how that sort of materialised in the match. So generally, they allowed Vicario to have the ball at least for a couple of seconds, and they marked all of his options. And we've talked about before how when teams man mark us, they leave a 3v3 on the halfway line, which is, I've argued before, when it was Man City, like, that's super high risk, and not many teams, surely not many teams can do that. Might be wrong about that one, because turns out Vicario's long passing, it's not really not up to the level of his short and medium distance passing, that's for sure. A lot of lofting, a lot of chipping, a lot of floating, not great accuracy, not great distance on his long passes. Even maybe if his passing was at a high level, though, his long passing specifically, I mean, Son, Johnson, Werner, all easily physically dominated by their centre-back counterparts in those moments. And so we were in a pattern where Vicario would have the ball, all his short options are marked, he plays the ball long, Newcastle easily win the ball. Now, to be fair, half the time or more, we'd often win the second ball. By the time we settled the second ball, Newcastle have then been able to recover back into their deep shape. And so we've not been able to do anything effective with our build-up play. And we've only achieved that after the risk of what if Newcastle win the ball, you know, off our centre-back, off our keeper. Spooky stuff. And of course, they did do that to us for the second goal. So yeah, I guess what's the route forward? Like, if other teams are able to replicate this strategy, again, something I've been dubious of in the past, but now I'm much more open to. We don't have a ton of games left in the season, but for argument's sake, if other teams are able to replicate this, and also the teams we're going to come up against aren't really teams who massively alter their style to play against us and sit in a low block with the back five, right? But let's go with it. Multiple ways we could try to take things. Let's say we keep going with Vicario playing long. His long passing isn't going to get much better, but we would need to change the profile of our front three. So maybe you bring Richarlison in, more of a target man. Maybe he can win a header, but then we've still got to set up to win the long ball. Maybe you say, okay, Kulusevski struggled against low blocks recently, but he's got hold-up play. Maybe we can fire the ball into him and he can hold Dan Burn off. He's really strong. Perhaps that's the way we go. I think we could look to trying, and we kind of did this a bit in the second half, but trying to just see how extreme Newcastle are prepared to go with their man-to-man. What if we put in build-up both our fullbacks on the left flank and Bentancur on the left flank? Are they going to follow us all the way over there? And if we outnumber them there, you know, if we bring all those players over there, how much space is that open over on the other side? And can we switch it? Things like that. Can we, you know, that bit where Newcastle's wingbacks have to sprint away from Porro, away from Udogi, and get all the way back from one box to another box? Is there a way where if we get the second ball quick, we can then take advantage of that space? These are all
well yeah, by having someone like Højbjerg on who can play a quick diagonal rather than Bissouma who can't, you know.
Yeah.
in the way that Guimaraes wins the ball and then quickly plays the ball over the top for Isak. Like, we don't have a player other than Maddison that could do that, or Porro back.
Well, for a lot of the season, we've seen, like, the benefits we've gotten from two different profiles of number six, right? Bissouma, who's generally excellent under pressure, understanding, obviously, the context of him failing in this game, I would accept.
Yeah.
And then Højbjerg, who can hit a longer pass, right? But in this game, we had Bissouma, who would not progress the ball when he's being marked from behind, and then Højbjerg, who would try to but was high risk and would lose the ball in those situations. But not only what they do on the ball, but also like Bissouma, who will sit in the pocket and occupy his marker, versus Højbjerg, who will move out of that space.
Mm-hmm.
Probably we definitely need more of the player who will move out of the space in this particular game, whereas that's something I previously I've defended. Having discussed those other strategies, you know, crazy build-up ideas, making better use of the long ball, trying to catch the moment of transition through some sort of automation. Ange's answer that we've seen so far and that he spoke about post-match and what I suspect will be the direction is to be brave and to quadruple down on the game plan, which is to say, pass, the long ball isn't working. That's just giving it away. So fire the ball into Van de Ven under pressure. Fire the ball into Bissouma under pressure. Be brave. Stick to the game plan. Accept the pressure coming into you. Win your physical duel against fucking Anthony Gordon.
Yeah.
And draw them onto us and outplay them that way. And the thing is like, you know, you go back to early season, we did that against Bournemouth. We did that against Man United. We can do it. I think Newcastle are obviously one of the better pressing teams in the country, mm-hmm. and that's fair to say. But it's like we're not going to significantly upgrade on, you know, Van de Ven, Romero and Bissouma on the ball. You know, you can have a criticism of those players. And if you want to focus on Bissouma, that's fine. And I understand that. And yeah, there are no other number sixes in the world. You're right. But like realistically, he's very good under pressure. So we have to work plays to get, you know, we played the ball to Bissouma. And as the ball's going to Bissouma, Romero's got to move and get away from his marker just so he can get a touch. And then Romero gets a touch out from under his feet and he's looking forward and we've got a 3v3 on the halfway line. Then we can play the long ball and we need to get them there. And I think that would be the way to go forward. But we weren't able to do really any of that, hardly at all. And the one time we did, they tactical foul us, basically.
That's my biggest issue here is, I like, Bissouma's played, why is he not being given the advice to go to move out of where he is?
Sure.
Why, like, if we're, he should be braver, but then is that Postecoglou being braver by telling him, look, this isn't working, move, just move out of that space, drag them around a little bit. And I do believe that the long ball isn't the way. I think we should have invited the press even more and then played through it, which is, you're right, what we used to do, but that's, it just seems to have stopped. And I do think there is something about the midfield three right now that isn't quite working. For so long, we had Bissouma, Sarr and Maddison, and those were they were the three. But now Bentancur's come back from injury. He's not quite the player he is, but he's just usurped Sarr. Mm. And there seems to be something weird going in there. Maddison's clearly not working. I'd like to see Lo Celso start a bit more, or Kulusevski come back into the middle. Just take Maddison out. It's just not going right. And I think we need, Postecoglou needs to be brave. He pulled Son off after 60 minutes. That's never happened. I don't remember any Spurs manager really pulling Son off that early, just because the potential for goal threat from him. So I would like to see something else happen. I can't believe the Postecoglou arc, the narrative, has got me wishing for Højbjerg to start games now. I can't believe this is where this story's ended up.
Definitely agree that this would have been a game for Sara, you know, open space, transitional game, lots of ground coverage, bit of an odd one there, I guess.
Yeah, but equally, when Newcastle slink back into their low block, you can see, like, Ange might have expected a lot of that, so you want someone who can pick the pass a little bit more.
Okay, but we failed completely in that scenario anyway, so yeah, I think we have to accept, once Newcastle are into their low block, that, like, with the profile of wide players that we have at the moment, we're just not taking advantage of that situation. So the only way we're getting Newcastle in this game is by improving our transitional play.
I do agree. And just on the Ange quote about bravery, Alec Depkrinsky raised that and asked about bravery and which players in our team are brave. And I thought I might use this as a sort of launch point to talk about my high risk, high reward theory, because I think the high risk thing is the bravery. So if you look at goal one, so there's a Maddison-Son mix-up at the edge of the box. To be honest, I think it's Son's fault. I think he takes an extra touch that he doesn't need to take. Maddison's about to strike the ball and he can't because Son takes a touch. And then there's a long ball which is launched forward to Anthony Gordon. Udogi actually has the beating of him. He beats him. He takes the ball off him. But then you've got the kind of lingering moment, which we've seen from Udogi time and again. He lingers on the ball. He shakes the player off and he turns a defensive moment into an attacking moment. And that is the bravery that Postecoglou wants from Udogi in that moment. He's doing what he's told, but at the same time, on this occasion, he's beaten by Gordon. Some would say it's a foul. Personally, I think it's 50-50. Sure. I think Gordon does, he just uses his muscle and Udogi's kind of off balance. And then we're unfortunate that there's a decision for Romero to make. He tries to narrow the angle, but in trying to narrow the angle, he leaves a pass through to Isak, and then Van de Ven absolutely springs to catch up with him and launches himself into a sprint back, but has to then quickly slow down to change direction. And doing so, he loses his footing, allowing Isak to come inside and beat Vicario. And then goal two. So Gordon presses Van de Ven, who passes back to Vicario, which we saw a lot in this game. Gordon then continues pressing, forces Vicario to play long, and Byrne really aggressively wins a headed duel with Johnson. And the ball lands to Pedro Porro. And what we might have seen from Spurs players in many years gone is you turn and you chuck the ball up a line. Mm. You just knock it up a line and try and compete for the second ball. But no, Ange wants bravery. He wants the players to maintain possession. So Porro, thinking, let's keep the ball here, plays a blind pass, very foolishly, back towards Vicario. And we saw that happen with Udogi. I forget which match it was. Was it Brentford?
West Ham.
Where he plays a blind pass back to Vicario, and suddenly it's intercepted and ends up in a goal. Sort of the same thing happens here. He plays the ball back blind, and we're left in a situation where Van de Ven has to sprint back to make up the ground, and it looks as though he falls. But actually, when I watched it back, I watched it on super slow-mo, and he basically misjudges it. He thinks that Gordon's going to strike it with his left foot, and so he kind of goes to ground to block, realises whilst he's in midair that actually Gordon's chopping him, and then he kind of hangs a leg out to try and make up for it, but is easily beaten by Gordon, and Gordon just sort of puts it away quite nicely. So they're moments of bravery, in my opinion. They're doing players following instruction, but losing out on this occasion. And that thing is, that is going to happen. But then they've been doubled down on by a defender, then making a mistake 1v1. And we do put ourselves in situations where defenders are 1v1, and it's going to happen. And Van de Ven is not going to be perfect every time. Of course, the third one, I think, is another example of what Postecoglou wants. Another example of a team being brave. So Van de Ven is marking Isak, but he's marking him in the Newcastle half. He's stood next to him, basically. And the ball's played into Son's feet, takes it on the half turn, but he takes a really poor touch. It kills it too much, allowing Longstaff to come in from blindside. Guimaraes nicks it and punts the ball long to Isak, who has read what's happening in an instant. Van de Ven hasn't read it. He's onside because he's in his own half. He's got the run on him. A couple of touches to steady himself and a really nice finish. And then the fourth goal is a set piece, because we're really fucking terrible at set pieces, and we were all game again. But I do think that, like Ange saying afterwards, I want the players to be brave. Like, they're being brave. They're doing what you're asking them to do in possession. Okay, maybe when we've got the ball in settled possession, they're not. But there is a sense of bravery there, and it's what's failed them on this occasion. But I think we should continue it. I think, like, double down, like, continue being brave. It's the only way through this. It's the only way we're going to survive.
I don't know, man. I think that third goal, there was no bravery there, to be honest with you. I think if it was a brave action, Vicario's starting point is miles further up, and he clears up, which he was doing at the start of the season. When we played the high line against Chelsea, he would have been out and he would have got that. And you could see as Isak runs towards him, he's running back. So he wasn't brave there in that situation. I think our forward attacks break down, man. That's what happens. But for our attack to break down and then immediately for them to be one-on-one with Van de Ven, there's something not right here. And you could be brave. You could just keep charging in and charging in. But at some point, bravery becomes stupidity. And I think there is a little bit of stupidity here. So once players are never going to keep, they can't keep performing 10 out of 10 every game, or 8 and 9 out of 10. So at some point, there has to be, in my opinion, some form of tactical comfort that they could just play through it. So Man City, like, you don't really see this happen too often with Man City. They're very brave going forward, but there's also some kind of comfort and security in their system that if this happens, there's a knock-on effect. At the moment, it just seems we're attempting to do this and it's not working at all. And then teams are just coming back on us. And it's not a plan B. It's just a better plan A that needs to be put into place, in my opinion.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So you mentioned there about attacks breaking down, and that's what's going to happen in every game, and that is absolutely spot on. And Nathan's mentioned that as well and talked about, you know, why some of those attacks broke down. And I think for me, Harry Brooks nailed it in a thread on Twitter. This is HBrooks_coach. If you want to follow Harry, he's got some big opinions, but I think often some really interesting opinions. So Harry said, Spurs leave their defenders isolated. It's the risk they take, and by and large, they can cope with it. They would find it easier if the ball was able to remain in the final third. But Werner, Son, Richarlison, etc. can't play pass and move football. So in turn, what happens is that if the ball gets into the final third, it has to end in a chance or shot on goal almost immediately, which isn't always possible. Otherwise, the ball comes back to the other end very quickly due to poor technical quality and decision-making in the final third. But Spurs have committed a high number of players to the attack, so the opposition are breaking into huge amounts of space. And no matter how good Van de Ven and Romero are, they're going to be caught out now and again having to defend this. Again, yes, you want 1v1 profiles, but forwards who can play combination football, change the pace of attack, and help retain possession in the final third while still moving the opposition about to create gaps is a must. They need at least one player who has an Elise profile. Not only would it make you far better in attack, it would make you far more secure in dealing with transitions.
Yeah, I agree. I my position is because we need that 1v1 profile for against the low block, they will also offer us the differential in these situations. Therefore, that's the play we need, rather than like trying to find, you know, someone close to Kane, a target man who can hold the ball out and spray it around and stuff, because like who even is that? You know? Yeah. On Van de Ven for just a second, he has been truly remarkable this season, mm-hmm. right? So he, just on that, we can close the case there. He gets a pass. But I think quickly, when he's able to defend acres and acres of space, he can dictate the direction that that defending happens in. And when he defends in one direction, he's like as good as anyone in the world, right? Whereas when you're in the box, you try to force someone to the near post, Izak can cut back across you to the far post. And it's in those moments when I did my scouting video on him, I said, hey, he's got such faith in his ability to change direction. He's got such faith in his athleticism that he can sometimes lean a little too hard into it. And it's in those moments where we see he gets turned, because you simply can't turn as fast on the ball as the player with the ball. And so that's what we see in those scenarios. But who cares? Like, he's incredible. The problem is arriving in that scenario in the first place and not scoring 4 goals up the other end. Of course he gets a pass.
I would like...
Let me read a few... Sorry.
I would like Romero to help him out a bit. I always... Like, this is just me now, not just thinking... Like, it always seems to be Van de Ven. I guess that's his role to cover. But I do think Romero... He's a good defender, but sometimes we need him to, like, if your partner's not performing well, you kind of need him to step up. And he seems to be one of these players that if it's going bad alongside him, he will drop down to that level, where if that player alongside him is playing brilliant, he plays brilliant. And we've seen this quite often with his partners. When he's partnered with someone weaker, his performance tends to drop down to that level. And I would like to see Romero actually just kind of maintain or step up and just lead himself, rather than just kind of, you know, doing exactly what his neighbor, what his partner's doing. So I think we need a little bit more from Romero as well.
I think that's systematic, though. I think the sort of one being brought down to the other one's level, which I completely agree with, by the way, is what the system requires, because there's so much 1v1 defending and they don't really do much defending as a unit. Mm. Like, they complement each other very well in the way they play, particularly on the ball. But essentially, when they're defending, they're doing it in isolation. There's very little like back four communication, and like, you know how Roy Hodgson would tie his players together on the training pitch and they'd all move in tandem. We just don't really defend in that way a lot of the time, especially in a game like this, which is transitional. So I think that's why it kind of looks like Van de Ven's been let down. Like, I think it's the system letting him down rather than Romero, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's just very exposing. I want to read out a few questions. We had so many questions this week. I think when you've had a loss this heavy, people are desperate for like reassurance, and they want to hear that everything's going to be okay, or they want to get things off their chest. And yeah, we got loads of questions. So Minikayaka said, are you still on the Ordere Est Facere to do is to dare wagon, or can you see that Ange's inflexibility is grinding our team down? I love the man and his philosophy, but I don't have to love his stubborn tactics and unwillingness to evolve. If Ange can't evolve and establish a plan B this summer, well, it's the 2000s all over again. John White says, I'm all in on Ange Ball. I fully understand the risk-reward model and I'm 100% behind this revolution, but is it getting a bit ridiculous? It's such an obvious playbook to beat us. To have 73 possession and lose 4-0 is wild. Putting aside the set-piece problem, let's say 73% possession and 2-0 is still pretty crazy. The Premier League is a major step up from everything Ange has done before. Does he need to tweak the system? Last week, Nathan made a point that perhaps the final tweak to the system will be to leave three defenders back instead of two. Why not do that now? Maybe the trade-off is you only have 60% of the ball at Newcastle, but you dramatically reduce the risk of conceding goals at this elite level. Plus, 60% possession is more than enough to convert chances, assuming your attacking players are firing on all cylinders. Half White Rice says, after today's game, I'm getting similar vibes to Conte, but just in opposite form. Last year, we would concede possession and hope for a lightning counter. Very boring to watch. Today's game, I was feeling the same with the mindless, purposeless possession. Really boring to watch. I like Ange, but I'm just waiting to see what the changes can be for us to be successful against a low block. Is it just a dribbly winger? What profile of number nine would be successful? Would love to hear your guys' honest thoughts on how we can be successful next season and not just have more of the same. God, these are all coming from a similar place.
There is quite a bit here to be said of Postecoglou being a nice guy and not being a dickhead or megalomaniac, I think has helped him. I think had he been a dickhead like Conte, there would be a lot more turning against him. I do think Postecoglou does bring good vibes. We do like how he shows himself and how he talks about the club and how he doesn't throw players under the bus. I think that's going to buy him a little bit more time. But ultimately, you know, we need to start seeing some results. And the fact that we are losing these games and getting battered in these games is a big problem. And yeah, I do get similar Conte vibes to this at the moment.
Really? I'm nowhere near. So I just think this is year, like, he's completely revolutionized how we play. We've gone from being quite a passive low block a lot of the time. Not so much in Conte's first season, but certainly by the end, to the most front foot pressing side in the league, the most intense press in the league. It's frantic, it's hectic, it's very open, but it's exciting to watch a lot of the time. A lot of people disagree. A lot of people think it's been sterile. I don't. I think there's been periods of every match which have had me off my seat. We've lost Kane. We've had to deal with losing our greatest ever player, and we're kind of not really thinking about Kane because we've still been delivering a reasonable number of goals. I said we'd finish seventh this season. We're two or three places above that, likely to finish fourth or fifth, probably. We had a terrible injury crisis. We lost Son and Saar and Bissouma in January. I just think it's fine. I think this is absolutely fine as the first season. Like, sure. He's to me, we're ahead of schedule. We're ahead of where I expected to be at this point. If we come to this point next season and we're still fifth, maybe fourth, we're still losing the odd game 4-0, for me, alarm bells will be ringing. I'd be like, where's the progress? Because there have been things that have frustrated me this year. I've made it very clear that his use of substitutes in the first half of the season drove me to distraction. I think part of the problem we're seeing now, and perhaps even why Pedro Porro went off injured, I think is his lack of rotation, lack of willingness to try things, lack of willingness to try alternative options. So Son, every year without fail, has a terrible dip in form and we're all left scratching our heads as to what is going on with Son. It happens every year. We always forget. And then he'll come back and be brilliant again. Because he's just played Son consistently through this, it's made me feel like Son shouldn't be in the team. It's made me like really frustrated with Son and like taking out some of my anger with Spurs on Son, who's delivered this year in terms of goals and assists. So that's on Ange. Like, why is he not rotating more? Why is he not taking Son out of the team every now and again? Madison's come back from injury and been a shadow of his former self. So like Barley said, why is Lo Celso not getting a look in? And I do think the lack of involvement of young players has left us a bit short in terms of the squad. but also looking forward to next year. It's going to leave us short in terms of the UEFA rules with club-trained players. I think he could have involved Donnelly, perhaps even Dorrington, certainly Santiago, and that's frustrating me as well. So there are things, don't get me wrong, that I'm not thrilled about. But on the whole, like, he's a breath of fresh air. He's turned the club's fortunes around in my eyes and made me feel like I actually care about the club again. And I'm very happy to commit to another year of Ange Ball. And then if we get to the same point of the season next year and it all looks the same, then maybe we reassess.
Yeah, I'm not saying we should sack him, but this, it's like, he's got the best back five that we've had at Tottenham since early Pochettino days. But we have been helped this season by Man United being terrible, Newcastle dropping out of the top four, Chelsea being a mess as well. So the league has been kind to us this season that we're still in amongst it. But I think we're conceding too many goals. I'm not happy with the midfield balance, and yeah, I'm just not happy in general. And I do think a lot of the positivity is down to Postecoglou being a nice guy.
Okay, yeah, big picture, I am still really, really excited for next season because I feel optimistic about the summer that we're going to have to support that. I definitely feel less good about seeing out this season now after this game, I would say. But yeah.
So one of the things people have been pointing towards as a sort of pick-me-up, and Sonrenity, also known as Bardi, said, reasons to be cheerful, please. One of the things is this quote from just after the Forest game where Postecoglou says, it's a constant evolution of this team. It's very much broad strokes. It's not about the detail at the moment. It's about trying to develop the identity of what we want to be as a team. And the game model doesn't change because of one game or a couple of performances and the players responding to that. So people are saying, look, big picture, he's getting the general philosophy across. You know, Porro playing back to Vicario because he wants to keep the ball. Udogie lingering in the ball because he wants to turn defence into attack. They're kind of big picture philosophy things. And then there'll be some tweaks around the edges. Then there'll be some detail which can be implemented in the preseason training. And maybe that's like where these fixes that Nathan suggested come into play, so that we have a response to particular tactical game plans that nullify us. What do you think, Nathan? Do you think that's a reasonable expectation?
You think for like next season? What's the time frame? Yeah, there's been this whole thing because Eric Dyer did an interview. People keep sending me this. Eric Dyer did an interview, a really good, interesting interview, by the way. And I still find myself drawn to Eric Dyer as a person very much. So
yeah.
Happy for him. Same. Happy for him. He's having a decent time in Germany. In which he talked about like his experience under various Spurs coaches. He talked about how it was very tactical under Conte, and what he means by that is they did a lot of here's the shape, everyone stand out in your positions against some cones, and then we'll do the exact specific plays. And whereas Ange doesn't really do tactics or something was the quote. And so people,
because it's principle based,
right? Because it's principle based, which is in the quote. What that means is, firstly, Ange delegates to his coaches a lot. I watched a really, really good. I watched a couple of them. I watched one with Matt Wells. That was through the Spurs' official channels, Inside Spurs. That's part of, which is a really good production, by the way. Shout out to Spurs for their work. Pre-match stuff is really good. One with him, in which he talked about his job and what it's like working under Ange. And then another similar thing, but this is through an Aussie thing, Optus Sports, maybe, with Mila Jedinak, in which, by the way, he spoke quite intelligently about defensive set pieces. That's a topic for another time. So anyway, Postecoglou delegates to his coaches a lot, doesn't tend to address the team very much directly, tends to save that for game day and so on. But yeah, principal work is tactical work, in my opinion. And I should have prepared and got the exact quotes before me here, but the clues are all in what Eric says, which is that, like, we know exactly how we're going to play. We know what the principles are. We're instilling the principles of our play. Like, that's all tactical. And that shows on the pitch. The idea that we're, like, not tactically preparing for games is just not true at all. So let's get rid of that. Quotes on this. There's an anticipation that this season, the whole season, is dedicated to this is the way that we play. let's go out and do it. And then maybe next season we'll have, okay, because we want to win this particular game, these are the minor tweaks we're going to make to this game. But again, we've seen tweaks on the fly. We've seen halftime substitutions. We've seen adaptations. We talked a lot about this already. The adaptations are there. If you want larger adaptations, yeah, maybe it'd be nice to see some of them more next season.
Yeah. I want to give a few more mentions to people who sent in questions, because we kind of covered them off in our discussion. But Jezel, $43, Lordy69, Jim Pollard, thank you all so much for your questions. Let's talk a little about Son before we sign off, because I think Barley's right. I think it was a bit of a watershed moment, him coming off before even the hour mark. Sean E says he'll be 32 in the summer. His skills as a winger are declining. He's not great fit at striker. Is it time to consider moving on Son? And Ben Wenton says a tweet from Nathan during the West Ham game about taking Sonny off made me think about a certain issue I've been worried about for next season. The thought of taking Son off the pitch so early made me feel weird. That left me wondering for next season if Rishi and Sonny split their game time at striker, Rishi against low block, Sonny in the rest, would it feel weird having your captain not starting a lot of games? Is it a problem that the captain is not a guaranteed starter every week, or have I been brainwashed by the Hugo captaincy? And finally, Blanky says, Ali Gold has said Tottenham are in the market for a six and a striker this summer. Thoughts on who you'd want to bring in? So there's been a lot of speculation today about bringing in a striker. That leads people to think, well, Ange doesn't want Richarlison. But at the same time, we've seen Son struggle in a run of games. He's 31, turning 32 later this year. He's the captain of his club, his country. He flies around the world constantly. It must take its toll mentally and physically. He is an explosive player. He needs to find a yard to get a shot away, and that is reliant on explosiveness, which can be hampered by fatigue. And I just wonder if, in the same way Liverpool are starting to think of life after Salah, maybe Spurs are starting to think of life after Son. And yeah, I want to get your thoughts on that, really. You know, Son has scored goals this year. He's delivered. But his front play hasn't always been effective.
You do realise here you're turning to the sell Son for 75 million team here. Nathan and I have been trying to sell Son for a couple of years now. Because this is how I am, I would have sold him after he won the Golden Boot, because I think that was perhaps his peak of his powers. And I've always been, you sell high when the stock is high. Just business. So yeah, we should have sold Son already.
But the selling high moment has passed. And so yeah. Now we are in, you know, a glacial phasing out of Mr. Tottenham, I think. There was a bit in the question about a captain who doesn't play much, and the Hugo era. Cast your mind back if you can to the Ledley King era for a captain who doesn't necessarily play all that much. Maybe that's before some of your times, but it's a thing. It's no great problem. We've got three vice captains, is that right? Mm-hmm. So I ain't worried about that too much. I tweeted the most coated criticism, the most protected, apologetic criticism of Son, aware, at least somewhat aware, but also it was genuine from the heart, that it might reach, you know, Korean Son Twitter. And it did, and they gave me no mercy. I was critical of Son coming towards the play and getting involved in build up because he's really bad at it. That's why
he is bad at it.
and so, you know, there's a group, a significant online group out there who are not Tottenham fans, who are explicit in the fact that they are Son Heung-min fans, and they didn't like that tweet, and they say, well, you know, there's obviously a reason that he's having to come towards the play. Clearly, there's a failure in midfield. And it's like, I know that. And I have covered that extensively. And And yes, obviously, there's if he was instructed to just stay on the line of the last man, that's what he'd do. And so the coach bears some responsibility too. But I'm a fan of my team and I'm allowed to express myself and express frustration with the player who lost the ball in build-up for us getting countered against and always hampers us, basically, in that situation, unless you can get that pocket of space to accelerate into and then get a shot away. That's when he's outstanding. But ultimately, they are right, although they're fucking annoying, they are right that the issue isn't with Son. The issue starts earlier on. And he's 32. Yeah, he's slowed down a little. But if we can service the ball into the box, if we can service the ball in behind, he will bag goal after goal after goal after goal. Said it several times before. I've said it all season. I said it since pre-season. I said it since before pre-season. We've got two really good strikers in Son and Richarlison. And I reckon Richarlison will probably score 15 link goals this season. I said. And I reckon Son's a perfectly good option there too, because he fits the profile of a forward who doesn't really touch the ball until it's in the box. Okay, there's a current point of failure there. The Newcastle game is the first time when I said, we sure are lacking a profile of a forward who could hold the ball up when we would really benefit from that right now. But again, who would you bring in to do that? Bearing in mind that we've got Son and Richarlison on the books, so we're not going to keep both of them and bring in a hold-up player. So can you find someone who is as good or better than those two players and what they bring? How much is that going to cost you? How much of the budget is that going to eat up? And then what do you do? Do you sell Richarlison? Do you sell Son? For me, I'm not looking at number nines. And I'm more open to the argument now than I was before. I see it in the Newcastle game. I see how, okay, my position was Postecoglou's striker doesn't touch the ball until it's in the box. Maybe in the reality of Premier League football, that's got to be a tweak. We need to involve the nine and build up play more. And we've got two players who aren't brilliantly suited to that, although I would say Richarlison more so than Son, a fair bit more so than Son. Fine, but I just don't see, like, we're not going to bring in, you know, we're not going to bring in someone better than Son without being fleeced out of an enormous amount of money that we need elsewhere. So play Son and Richarlison and get better at football elsewhere on the pitch.
Yeah, I think if we played Son how Aston Villa play Ollie Watkins, who just doesn't do anything other than just plays on the shoulder. But the problem is very few teams play that high against us right now. So yeah, it's just not working for Son. And I love Son as much as everybody else does. And people always say, oh, but you wanted to sell him. But that's just the personality. Sometimes I just
same
remove.
Thing.
Yeah, you just remove. Sometimes you've got to remove the emotion from it. But I do agree that if the team around us was better, then Son's weaknesses wouldn't be so obvious.
I think this comes back to what you were saying earlier, Bardi, about it's not just about the team being brave, it's about Ange being brave. And I think he needs to take Son out of the team, to be honest, for a couple of games, or at least out of the number nine position. He's having poor matches there. He's had five matches in a row where he's been poor. I think it's been five since the Villa game. To be honest, I didn't think he was that great in the Villa game. Then suddenly he exploded into it and was amazing, which is sometimes what Son has done.
Right,
in the past.
But again, it's also the role of the Postecoglou number nine to do that.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, of course. I completely get it. But I do think he's hampering us at the moment. Like, he does this every year. He has a run of games where he's just off it and his head drops and he looks low in confidence. And what you have to do in that period, well, you've got two options. You play him through it, which we're doing at the moment, or you take him out. You bear in mind that he's a much older player now. You give him a rest. You let him come off the bench against tired legs, and that even if he's 10% less explosive against tired legs, it'll even out and he'll get his separation. And I think that's what he needs to do. I think he either needs to play Son on the left, use the Werner missed chances as an excuse to bench him and play Son there, and then play Richarlison through the middle. Because honestly, you know, this game in some ways could be put down to an informed striker against an out-of-form striker. You know, Isak was electric in front of goal. Son made several poor touches, which led to turnovers, which led to goals. And that's just the way it is at the moment, and it's frustrating. And obviously, Richarlison being injured has come at the worst possible time as well. But we expect them to be back after this little break for Spurs. And I do think Ange needs to be brave and play Richarlison through the middle.
Well, when Son was away with Richarlison, that was when he bagged all those goals. That was when he had his fresh run of form. I don't know if you watched the Liverpool Atalanta game, but Scamacca, who I've never been a huge fan of, did a little bit of everything: penalty box presence and build up play. And why don't we go get Scamacca?
I mean, the thing is, if Alistair Gold is right, and you know Alistair has a lot of good contacts, if he's right that we're looking for a number nine, I don't know what that either means. We're selling a forward or planning to sell a forward, or it means we won't take up the Werner option, or it means we will take up the Werner option and won't sign another dribbly winger, which will leave Nathan furious because our squad cannot cope with all these players.
No.
You have been listening to The Extra Inch with me, Windy, my sidekick and best friend, Barney, and our tactics guy, Nathan Aklar. If you like this, there's plenty more at patreon.com/TheExtraInch. Production is by Nathan Aklar. Our logo, artwork and website are designed by Creighton Miller. Our music is by David Lindmer. You can find him on Instagram at David Lindmer. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. Subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. And most importantly, be sure to tell all of your Spurs friends. Shout out to the ex-subs. We love every single last one of you. And of course, come on you Spurs.